Good evening. It's February the 26th, 2019. It's the evening. Almost 6:30 in the evening here in Seattle and Little Saigon. And I'm drinking some coffee. I went to the food bank today, got some stuff that wasn't too terrible. I made the mistake of eating a bunch of peanut butter, and I gotta tell you something. On the bottle of your peanut butter, it tells you how many calories it has, and this is a very scary thing to look at. If you are a person who counts calories, I sort of don't, because up until recently, my food security situation had been really unstable. And which is the good news, I need to lose weight. I actually lost about, I think, 20 pounds. But the bad news is it's not the good kind of dieting. It's the kind that, you know, it's the Venezuela diet plan is what it is. And I'm not proud. I'm not ashamed. If you want to say, well, Dan, you're a hobo bum, that's your right. I'm okay with that. If you want to call me a bum, I'm fine. I'm fine with that. I don't expect people to take care of me, but I have gotten help. I don't expect the world to be kind, but sometimes it is. And I don't expect the path to be smooth, but I do believe that, yeah, I'm a Christian. I believe that Christ is looking out for me. I'm a rascal. I get into trouble, but I do believe God is looking out for me. And I am truly, truly, truly looking for a way through this wilderness. But yeah, it's okay. Anywho, the topic for tonight is kind of an issue I work on. It's kind of related to something a minister talked about in church this week, and I don't need to revisit that train again. It's kind of related to a complaint, a common complaint towards me. You know, I think I probably mentioned this, but one of the common complaints towards me from friends and family, including my ex-wife, is that I'm so fucking negative. Like, Dan, why do you have to be so negative? You look at the world and all you see are these, you just don't see glasses half empty. No, 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 Dan. You see glasses half empty, you know, that are radioactive and filled with disease and attacking people, and they're Nazis. Nazi half empty glasses. And there's truth to that. I do see a lot of glasses half empty, or glasses only half full or whatever. Really half empty, right? I see the glasses half empty Nazi glasses, mutant Nazi glasses that are half empty a lot. Yeah, maybe. But I don't know that that makes me crazy, or even if I'm wrong. You see, this is the problem. I can think back to moments in my life where I would have said I had an earthquake of consciousness where all of a sudden my feelings about the world radically changed. And one of these was, you know, when I was 8, I think it was when I was 19. It was my first year at the University of Washington. I was doing the University of Washington debate team, individual events, extemporaneous speaking, blah, blah, blah. So if you want to know if I ever did public speaking, I did a lot of it a long time ago. And I think it was the University of Oregon. I was sitting by a reflecting pool in the garden, and I was reading the Confessions of St. Augustine. And I had this sort of insight. It was weird. I think St. Augustine was talking about stealing fruit from a neighbor, and I just had this sort of insight. I said to myself, this feels like now. This feels like this moment. Like, you know, Hans-Georg Gadamer, in Truth and Method, talks about the notion of goodwill, you know, and he believes in hermeneutics, and that's how you get to the secret, the truth of the text, and that's a big topic. But Hans-Georg Gadamer believed in goodwill, and you could have these moments of goodwill, not just with people in talking to them, where you reach a point of understanding, like, oh crap, we understand each other. We might not even agree. In fact, we might vehemently disagree, but we understand each other. And Gadamer would call that a moment of goodwill. And I think he also felt that existed with the text. Like if you're reading a historical text and you've done enough due diligence to understand a little bit of the history surrounding it and the culture. You don't have to be perfect. You don't have to be as smart as Heidegger reading ancient Greek, that you can achieve a kind of understanding. And I believe this is true. So I was reading St. Augustine's Confessions, and so you don't, and if you don't know, St. Augustine lived at the end of the Western Roman Empire. And you could argue the classic Roman Empire in a sense. And so he saw a lot of people's paradigms and beliefs and dreams and hopes go basically turn to dust. He saw that. The Eastern Empire might last for another 1,000 years, and it did. It lasted until 1453. But the Western Empire was going to be gone before he was dead. And he would be Bishop of Hippo, and he would be living a completely different life as a Christian, as a saint. And so here's the thing. When I was reading him thinking about when he was young, it kind of made me think, this is the life I feel like I'm living in. The life on the verge of the end. Now, of course, you could say, well, Dan, that's just because you've been a negative fuck ever since you were young. And I think you can make a good point of that. Like, that's a valid argument. It's possible that this is just the way I've always been. But yeah, there was that moment where I felt a kind of connection with a time in the world when things were falling apart. They weren't getting better, they were getting worse. I'll also say I've had similar feelings, even during good times, and I've had good times. People will have these good times and bad times, and I've had a few good times. I've had a few times where I thought I was going to have a normal life. Like, there were moments in my life where I thought maybe I would end up with a normal family, house someplace, kids that end up in college or whatever. And I thought that was going to be my life. And that did not happen. And I can cry if I want to, but a lot of that, maybe all of it's due to me. In order to do the thing that basically involved being a father and a husband and having a family, I had to be the kind of person who, well, maybe I never was. And there, I do have a theory. I do think having kids changes men a lot, but that's irrelevant. I don't know that people should just have kids to think that that'll make them grow up either. It's complicated. I don't know. I don't think having kids makes you a man, but I'm not sure you know you're a man until you're a parent, until you're a father. That's a belief of mine. So you might have all the ingredients to be a good man, but are you really a man if you're not a father? It's a weird topic. I have mixed feelings about this. I don't think I'm a good uncle. So yeah, I have a view of the world that's very negative, and it's why being a hermit and being isolated works for me and probably works for most other people. I mean, listen, Zero Hedge has banned me, so I'm not really getting a lot of traffic. And so, yeah, it's going to be six or seven people listening to these podcasts a day, maybe. And there's a reason for that. I'm not like doing the feral thing, happy, happy, happy. I'm not sending you signals that make you feel like everything's okay. I wish everything was okay. I wish everything was fine. I really do. In my heart, I think, wouldn't it be great to be rich? I'd love to be rich. I'd love to have lots of money. I would love to work hard and become successful. I would love to be in a place where I felt like I was welcome. The problem is, as a software engineer in this city, I feel like a leper. And you could say, well, Dan, that's your problem. You're not willing to adapt. And I'll tell you something. Adaptation is overrated. I'm not saying it's not good to be flexible. It's great to be flexible. But that's the whole point. Flexibility is about something bending without breaking. Adaptation is like saying, I'm gonna blow up the whole thing and start from scratch again. These are very different things. There are things in this world people should be willing to be flexible about. I think that, yeah, and in order to work, you have to do that. But there are other things where maybe your flexibility is really just self-destruction? I don't know. I mean, you have to ask yourself, what does it feel like to feel a constant kind of rage towards people that are supposedly your coworkers? And no, it's not a rage to want to harm them or kill them or something like that. It's this just general anger. Just, I don't know how you turn that into a situation that ever works. I really don't. And I think there's a lot of that mutual. I can tell you, it's like that interview from last week or other interviews I've had. It's mutual for a lot of people, for a lot of H-1B visa Chinese Indians. They hate the white man as much as we hate them. And so if it is racist, believe me, a lot of racism to go around, a lot of it. And that's no excuse. I don't think that's right either. But what am I supposed to tell you? That I'm going to magically change things in Seattle? I'm not. I'm not. I'm not. No one is. I can pray to God in heaven. God, help me to find a place I can work. Help me to find a place where I can work and not feel like an outcast. But the problem is, this falls into that category again of problems God did not create. You know, this is the thing, and this is where people get pissed off sometimes with me too, especially when we're talking religion. I delineate on purpose between things I can blame God for and things I can't. And the truth is, most of the tragedies these days, 99.9% of all the shit I would say that makes me feel like maybe the world's coming to an end is caused by people, not God. People could make different choices. Listen, in 2006, and I just spilled something. God, I feel, oh boy, I shouldn't have done that. Name in vain. Okay. Heck, I feel stupid. But yeah, heck, I feel stupid. I just spilled coffee. That was stupid. 2006, I was visiting a cousin of mine, and I won't say more than this. It's a cousin, really brilliant person. A guy who studies wisdom for a living. I won't say more than that, just a brilliant guy. And we were talking about global warming. And listen, back a long time ago, I don't know that I was stupid, but I believed stupid things. You know, people sometimes believe stupid things. Prior to 2008, I believed the Federal Reserve was an honest to goodness institution that helped us keep the banking system stable, blah, blah, blah. I believe the Federal Reserve, the Fed, was an honest, decent thing prior to 2008. After 2008, the Fed would always be something ugly to me, you know? And yeah, I don't think I'm wrong about this. I think the Fed is an ugly institution. I think banking in America has become an ugly industry. I don't really want to say more than that. It's gotten to the point of social engineering. I mean, if you're, it's just ridiculous. So I don't want to go much further down that road. But prior to 2008, I would have said, I believe the Federal Reserve serves a kind of purpose that isn't terrible. And then after 2008, it's like these guys are just terrible. That's just it. So human beings, they go through periods of time where their views of the world can radically change. And in 2006, I was having breakfast with my cousin, and I was expressing some of the stuff that I'd heard Michael Crichton say. He was, I think he was, you know, he'd written a book called State of Fear, and it was kind of about, and actually, it's funny, I've never read this book yet, but I was listening to one of his interviews. And he was describing the book and how it was about this big conspiracy and the government making it look like there's a climate crisis when there's not. And yeah, I was talking to my cousin, and my cousin got really upset with me. And the thing is, it's one of those situations where it was a couple things. We were talking about that, and then I think we also ended up talking about the 2004 election. And I'll admit this, I used to believe nutty things. I used to believe there was a choice. Like, if you voted Republican or Democrat, it actually had an impact. I used to believe that. I'll admit it. You want me to admit something terrible about myself? I used to believe voting worked. I really did. And so we were talking about which representative to the crocodile did we vote for, and how Al Gore might have saved us. And I think even my cousin probably knows now that Al Gore is part of the same structure. But again, I mean, he made his own points. He made valid points. I made my own points. They were kind of valid. But the funny thing is that my reason for believing what I believe, those reasons I no longer believe. I don't trust the government. I used to basically say that no matter how evil people are, that I believed our government was kind of just, at worst, just kind of incompetent, but not really super evil. I used to believe that a long time ago. I still think it's kind of incompetent as institutions go, but governments just end up there. I mean, incompetence is an outcome on a certain scale for all government when you consider its purpose. But anyways, no, I used to believe stuff, and so now when I think about climate change and I think about who's in power and whatnot, I do ask that question, could this be real? And that sort of brings me to sort of the interesting subject for tonight that's an extension of the subject about the whole end of the world thing. There is a podcaster slash activist, or I should say activist slash podcaster, YouTube channel guy who has a website, geoengineeringwatch.org. His name is Dane Wigington. That's spelled WIGINGTON, Dane Wigington. WIGINGTON, yeah, Dane Wigington. Anyways, I've listened to a lot of his podcasts. He has a weekly one, and I actually went backwards to like 2017 and just listened to them. Before I continue, I gotta say a couple things. I don't know this guy personally, so this falls into that category of what do you say about the stranger? Like this guy, I don't know him. I can research him online. I can look at his CV. I can listen to his podcast, but at the end of the day, I don't know this guy, so I don't know for certain if he's legit or not, but my instincts tell me that he's legit, that he's a good man, that he's a good man in a messed up world like a lot of us are these days. And he's also a dad, and I can't imagine if you listen to this guy and he is sincere, I mean, truly sincere. I can't imagine knowing the things he knows, believing the things he believes, and being a father, and he's also a father. So this is I think this is a brave, intelligent, sincere, good man. Do I know for certain he's 100% right about, the solar reduction, solar radiation management? Do I know that he's right about geoengineering with, the different types of aerosols and metals that they can mix into the engines and create essentially. Excuse. Oh man, excuse me. I had a cough there. Some of the aluminum from the jets above. But I do not know. I have seen some weird stuff. I will have to state the following. Back in 2016, 2017, I would take these weird, videos of the sky outside of Riley Towers. I had a pretty good view, and the sky was pretty weird at times. And there were, and again, you would see this etch-a-sketch thing. Like, you remember when you were a kid and you would play etch-a-sketch? I don't, you know what I mean? I don't mean Walter White making homemade thermite to break in and get the special magic juice to make a special blue meth. But yeah, that kind of etch-a-sketch. But yes, I remember looking out the sky in 2016, 17 out of Riley Towers on the 8th floor and saying to myself, this looks weird. I don't know what this is. I can't prove it one way or another. But it's weird. It's weird. It doesn't fit into any category that I know of, and it's just plain weird. Now, does that mean that this phenomena is real? That they're actually, doing this kind of atmospheric climate management? That they're injecting materials from engine outlets on these airplanes and etch-a-sketching their way across the sky? chemtrails. He said the thing is, Dane Wigington doesn't like it if you say chemtrail. And I'm trying not to the rest of this whole podcast, but yeah, these are the things that's what you call them. And they are weird looking. And if you start from the basis of, I do not believe much of what I've been told, which is pretty much where I'm beginning, then I don't know what to think. But what I will tell you is listening to a podcast from Dane Wigington is scary as heck. I mean, if you believe the guy is sincere, and I do, then listening to his 55-minute long podcast is really an exercise in a kind of terror. Because I don't know if you've ever seen that movie Melancholia, Lars von Trier. It's an interesting film. It's kind of it's a very scary film, and it gives you this perspective. I mean, he created the film based upon a discussion about depression with his therapist, that his therapist believed that people who suffer from depression actually brighten up during times of catastrophe. And actually, like for example, supposedly Winston Churchill, and I've read this too, Winston Churchill suffered from depression, but during times of struggle, he seemed to perk up. So yeah, this is a belief. It may not be true. I'm sure it's some type of Snopesy thing. But supposedly, the movie Melancholia, excuse me, Lars von Trier, Melancholia. Supposedly, that movie was based upon this discussion. And again, if you've not seen the movie, I don't want to do a spoiler alert, but believe me, not a happy film. Not a happy film. In terms of the situation for the planet, it is an end of the world film. And when you deal with topics like that, I mean, I remember seeing that movie for the first time about a month after my sister Nancy died of cancer at 43. And it was like, yeah, maybe I didn't pick a good time to watch that film. Dane Wigington is that kind of level of seriousness, but it's real. I mean, that's the thing. If you believe him, and I just can't believe he's a liar, so that just means you have to believe he's right. I don't think you, I wouldn't question his sincerity. It's just a question, is he right? It's kind of like I was watching this, I think, Danish physicist a week or so ago on a YouTube video talk about cosmic rays and their relationship to clouds. And so you get a lot of cosmic rays, you get more clouds, you get more clouds, it gets colder. So more cosmic rays means, colder temperatures. That's interesting. It was interesting. And the guy seemed to make sense. And if I believe the YouTube video of the Danish physicist, the whole thing makes sense. But at the same time, it doesn't quite gel with what Dane Wigington's saying. So this is the thing. I think Dane Wigington's sincere. That doesn't mean he's right, but he is sincere. And also, I must say this, nature has been spooky. But is that because of just the geoengineering? Is it some other reason? Is it cosmic rays? I don't know. I don't know. Last summer, the air was so thick with particulates and other crap from the fires that during the month of August, I gotta tell you, I would walk home and I would get winded. And I don't ever really get winded. Okay, this is Seattle. This is clean air, West Coast Seattle. The air was so bad for about a month that I would get winded. And if I was getting winded, there were people, elderly people, for example, or other people with compromised lungs or compromised breathing that were probably having an even harder time. So I can listen to Dane Wigington and think about last summer and say, you know what? People telling me this happening more often, haven't been back for a while, do not remember this being like this when I was a kid. Okay, yes, we would have fires. Yes, the sky would get all smoky, but the earth seemed to have a little bit more capacity to deal with that. what I remember from last summer was something I don't remember my whole life. But again, people could say, well, even if that's true, Dan, it's worse in China. And you know what? It probably is. But how does that even remotely deal with the question of whether it's, you know, a good situation? Telling me it's worse in China, saying that there are cities in China where you just can't breathe at all, doesn't really help, actually. All it tells me is that the situation's pretty messed up for everybody. And so, yeah, Dane Wigington is pretty scary as far as podcasters go. And his message is dire. That's the only word to apply. It is dire. It is a situation, if you believe him, of life and death. Either we stop this geoengineering nonsense and we get serious about restoring the health of the Earth, or we're going to die. That is essentially the argument. And I can't really say one way or the other myself right now whether that's true. I can tell you that I think the human race is facing a lot of challenges. And so on one level, I don't think it is the end of the world. I think that's just the fear talking, but we're facing challenges. And these challenges, some of them are economic, but they are probably the cascade effect of something else. And when I say cascade effect, there are phenomena that look like problems in the world that are really just the downstream effects of another problem. So it is possible that the core issue is the issue that Dane Wigington talks about, or the issue that, you know, James Howard Kunstler with Peak Oil talks about a lot. I don't know for certain myself, one way or the other. And I can say, well, okay, it's in God's hands. And that's true. It is in God's hands. But God gives us choices. And if there's a story in the Bible that needs to be remembered, is the common story of making the wrong choice. You know, God preparing the way before you, and you decide to go another direction. That's a pretty common biblical story. And although, you know, often people are saved, even from poor decisions, it can be a very painful process. So I don't know that the world itself is coming to an end. What I would say is that we have some fairly big challenges, and it's kind of easy to get burned out off of this. I would also say that I don't believe everyone's being included in the conversation. I don't care. You don't have to be an anarchist. You don't have to be a libertarian. But ultimately, I think you kind of have to admit that there are people making decisions about our future, and it's not us, and it's happening. I think a lot of it's happening in secret. So it's possible that the intentions of the people making these decisions are good intentions. I don't think they are, but it's possible. You could grant that. It's still disturbing to me that we're not participating together. You know, if you believe Dane Wigington, then all this geoengineering is a band-aid to hide us from the fact that the climate itself is in terminal collapse. And if that's the case, then it sounds like there's not much we can do. Even if we all started doing the right thing tomorrow, it sounds like, according to Dane Wigington, that it may be too late, or at least for most of us. And if you read James Howard Kunstler, and I think the guy's brilliant, but if you read his World Made by Hand series, which is a fictional series about the near future, or you read his nonfiction, like, you know, The Long Emergency or Too Much Magic, but there are others, there's other works, those are just some of the ones I've read. Or if you just read his bi-weekly blog, Clusterfuck Nation, you'll get another interpretation. It's not quite as dire as Dane Wigington, but it's still kind of dire. The future's going to get rough, okay? The cheap, easy oil is pretty much gone. The shale oil miracle was a shale oil sham. And in a little while, things are going to get kind of tough. Maybe 5 years, maybe 10 years, but it's going to be a mess. And there are the others who say the opposite. The Ray Kurzweils and the people who will watch a Disney film or a sci-fi film and say, well, wait a minute, Dan. We're going to have robots on Mars, and we're going to have pizzas on Pluto, and we're going to be traveling in ships to the nearest star with, you know, I don't know, Jennifer Lawrence or whatever her name was. We're going to be doing all this amazing stuff, Dan. Chris Pratt's going to be there. It's going to be awesome. I don't know. I mean, I think that you have to kind of accept the idea that if something terrible can happen, something wonderful can happen. And here's the other thing, too. I had a situation with a person not so long ago that was very unhealthy, but the guy did say some things once in a while that I kind of agreed with. And one of the things he said is like, well, if everybody changed their consciousness about God, then maybe the chastisement is avoidable. And I do think that's true. You know, it is the case that things may not be altogether that bad if we did all decide to change. You know, Dane Wigington is serious. He's trying to wake people up. But he does say every once in a while, like, listen, we got to take action. So if you're going to tell people to take action, you cannot believe all hope is lost. Sure, he might use a language that sounds like all hope is lost, but if you're demanding people do something, you still have to believe there's some hope. And when I say hope, I mean the realistic hope that we're not all doomed, that we're not all going to go down the tubes. It's like James Howard Kunstler. You know, I once heard him say that he'll give a talk, like at a TED talk or something, and people will want to know, okay, well, what's your solution? And he'll say, well, there might not be a solution. But he does say there could be intelligent responses. There are ways in which we can respond. We don't have to go crazy. We don't have to become barbarians. We could try to manage this together. I would contend in a voluntary and peaceful way. But the point is, we could try to manage this together. So there is, in all of this quote-unquote doom porn, as it sometimes is called, there is in these two cases a voice of, but you know what? There's something you can do. In the case of Dane Wigington, we can organize to stop all this bullshit and try to save the life system of planet Earth. In the case of James Howard Kunstler, we can try to come up with strategies for survival, not magical solutions, but intelligent responses. This is all true. Good times or bad times, these are messages that are true. I don't really know what's going to happen to the world. I think that there's a lot of nuclear nonsense right now that's a little worrisome. India and Pakistan seem to be surly towards each other. There appears to have been some attacks here and there. Yeah, a war between India and Pakistan could become nuclear. That would not be good. I really don't know what's going to happen. But I do know that the future is something you kind of have to, you know, it's a combination of things. You have to make the right decisions yourself to the best of your ability. Honestly, in my life, I don't know what I can do to do other than try to survive. I'll be blunt. I feel like I'm riding the same crazy turtle that everyone else is towards some type of oblivion. I don't know what I would do. I've tried to take action in the past. If I had the money, I think I would try to do more to help my neighbor in terms of economics, but I don't have any money, so it's sort of like, I don't know what I would do. And I don't think I'm alone. I think there are people with jobs and lives. It's like, I've got my kids and I got my paycheck and it barely pays for shit. If Dane Wigington's right, I don't know what I would do. And this is the battle for people who are trying to change things, that a lot of people these days are just getting by and they're being constantly told that things are going to be better right around the corner, and right around the corner is another mugging. So yeah, I really don't know what to tell people. You know, there is this theme in George Orwell's 1984, this one theme, or rather this concept of governance, where if you keep people in a constant state of near starvation, they're always sort of always dependent. They're always sort of in a mode of fight or flight. You're always going to have control. And I think that in a way, with the debt and the credit cards and everything else, and the working paycheck to paycheck, they've kind of achieved that in America. You know, people, most people I know, they do more or less live paycheck to paycheck. And so they don't really have the time to say, am I being told the truth? Are we on a crazy train to hell? They don't know. They don't know. They don't have time to care. They're trying to survive. I've talked about the whole, in the past, wounded on the battlefield. Listen, one of the great tactics, it's horrible, it's monstrous, but one of the great tactics in warfare is to leave wounded on the battlefield because wounded need help. And you're gonna, and you know, people say, well, we won't help our wounded, but you will. You'll help your wounded, you'll get them to hospitals. Two or three people will get involved. Wounded on the battlefield. Autism, cancer, dementia, wounded on the battlefield. And so people become even weaker in their ability to respond or to say, well, I'm going to organize a protest. Listen, you're working two jobs to pay the bills barely, and your sister or your brother or your mom just got cancer or has dementia or somebody has some other problem. Wounded on the battlefield. So yeah, I have been dark my whole life. And if you ask me, do I think the world, the planet, the universe is coming to an end? My rational brain says no, I don't. I think there are good times and hard times. I think that this has always been true. You know, I suggest sometimes that people read Barbara Tuchman's A Distant Mirror and think in terms of the 14th century crisis and think that for about 100 years, everything that could go wrong did go wrong. And it wasn't just about the Black Plague. And there is probably a time in the middle of the 14th century where people were saying, fuck, 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 the world's coming to an end. And from their perspective, maybe it seemed like it. And yet 100 years later, you have the beginnings of the Renaissance. And I'm not saying that meant the world was all good again. This is kind of the point, though, is that there are good times and bad times throughout history. Do I think the human race is about to be wiped out? I hope not. If Dane Wigington is right, it looks like it could happen. But do I think we're confronting some huge challenges? Moral, principled, ethical, historical, economic, and scientific challenges? Yeah, I do. And I personally think the only right answer is liberty. Like if you want to know how do we survive, well, only through freedom. We're not going to survive by having more government. I'm fairly certain of that. But I don't think that I can control that either. So it really is, if you were to ask me, it really is a case of being on a train called the modern world. And the cars of this train are labeled Russia, China, the United States. You could think of it as every empire on the planet right now. Every sub-empire has a car on this train, and the train is rusty, and the engine is busted, and the engineer running the train is drunk and crazy, and it's creakety and crackety, and it's horrible, and it's heading towards a bridge that is wooden and on fire. And yeah, you're going to go down the canyon 6,000 feet and crash. And I, as a passenger on this train, I don't control it. I have to sit in my frickin' chair like the rest of you. This is the situation. If we're really lucky, if we're really, really lucky, in my humble opinion, the train derails before it gets to the bridge. And that means that, yeah, You're going to get a bump on the head, and maybe some of you get crushed to death, but there's a chance for some of us. Like, it's like, you know, I now I'm going to say a lot. I want a t-shirt that says this. I feel like I need a t-shirt now made that says, not all are doomed. Not all are doomed in that scenario. If the train goes off the rails, it just means that people have to figure out how to solve problems for themselves for a while in a way that's different from today. But I do fear that the train will stay on the tracks just barely long enough to get to that bridge, to go down into that canyon, to explode. I do worry that people are treating nuclear weapons like a fetish. I do worry about the whole weapons fetish, the whole, you know, it's getting gross. Like, hey, isn't it cool? The Russians have a torpedo powered by a reactor that can go around the world and cause tsunamis. You know, the Americans are experimenting with this and that and have a directed energy weapon or something. You know, the Russians or the Chinese have a rail gun. We're building micronukes. There is a kind of gross fetish surrounding the nuclear thing. And also in pop culture. Like, there was this really silly show called The 100. I know it was based on some sci-fi, but this whole show, The 100, was about barely a century in the future after a nuclear war. Barely a century, okay? Barely 100 years in the future, I think, after a nuclear war. And the people of Earth, the people that are left, are all like barbarians speaking weird languages and dressing in old tires and leaves and leather. And listen, that's completely implausible. It would take a bit more than 100 years. But it was a ridiculous show. It made the aftermath of nuclear holocaust look sexy and survivable, and it had all kinds of sexy adventures. That's not remotely realistic, okay? For all sorts of reasons. If there's a nuclear war, it'll be terrible. If the Indians and the Pakistanis decide to exchange bombs, it will be terrible. If we're lucky, it stays regional, but even that's going to go around the world. It'll just mean more garbage in the atmosphere. So, I'm sorry, it's going to mean that. And it's going to be crap. More cancer. If it gets out of control, which the thing about nuclear war is that it's very unstable, the weapons themselves cause damage to stability. So the more of these weapons you use, the less stability you have. And so you do reach a point potentially in any nuclear war where it's impossible to say, let's turn this off. It's just going to go out of control until it burns itself out. That's the thing that people don't get about nuclear war, is that it isn't the reason why the B-52 stayed around for so long is that it was part of that triad belief that, well, it's our slow response, so we have time to talk. But once those bombs start flying, it's going to be EMP. Listen, there will be EMP that's unplanned simply because there'll be so many bombs going around. There's going to be EMP everywhere, and it won't even be on purpose. It'll be simply the nature of the exchange, of the war. So yeah, when people say, well, the Indians and the Pakistanis could nuke each other, but it will be okay. Listen, it might end up being okay for a while for you, but for the Indians and the Pakistanis, it's going to be pretty freaking terrible. And for the rest of the world dealing with all these, listen, there's going to be a lot of people with cancer. Okay? I hate to break it to you. A lot of people getting cancer from a little nuclear war, even if it's in India and Pakistan. People all around the world. So yeah, that's the thing. I don't know if the world is coming to an end or not. I don't. I'm not an expert on Revelations, and I'm still trying to process that book of the Bible. And that's a scary book. And you can run the risk of trying to pretend that you're a prophet or that you can see. I don't pretend. I have an active imagination. When I read about the dragon and the dragon's fire, it reminds me, in the tale of the dragon, it reminds me of an ICBM being launched. But the thing is, I do not know. I don't know. I do trust in God, and I do hope that people are wise. And I do hope that Dane Wigington, even though he seems 100% sincere and truthful and decent, I hope he's wrong. Because if he's right, then really the future's kind of terrible. It's just a matter of how terrible, really. I know that James Howard Kunstler is probably right in the way he sees the world. You know, my own intuition, my own research leads me to believe that he's probably right, but I still kind of hope he's wrong, because that's going to be a tough world for a lot of people. Sure, there's still going to be life, which means there'll be a future. There'll still be people, but it's not going to be 300 million people in North America. It'll be 50 million or 40 million, if that, and it'll be people just getting by. So peak oil, whatever you think about that subject, is a scary subject. If you believe peak oil is real, then the near future looks ugly. But I really don't know. And like I said, I would even though I believe the guy's intelligent and sincere as well, I just, you know, you still hope the guy is wrong. You still hope that someone develops some magical technology, some metallic hydrogen superconducting technology that allows us to pump electricity around the world from giant solar cells complexes built along the equator. I mean, you want to believe that there's going to be a fusion reactor or a zero point energy thingy or some type of super technology that's going to fix everything. That'll be nice. And then we can have everything we want, including our, you know, our mutant trees that produce IPAs and cheeseburgers, you know, right off the tree. Freshly picked IPA, freshly picked cheeseburger. It's crazy, but those crazy genetic engineers, man. So yes, I'm going to leave the subject like this. I don't know. I don't think it's the end of the world. But then again, that's relative too. You know, it's like all the stuff that's fear-mongering around Yellowstone Caldera. I don't know if it's legit fear-mongering or not. I mean, a lot of fear-mongering in general seems illegitimate to me. But the Yellowstone Caldera has got all these earthquakes, and people have been tracking it, and, you know, they're noticing stuff here and there. And if the caldera went off, that would be a big deal. A lot of people would die instantly if the Yellowstone Caldera cooked off. If the Yellowstone, maybe not instantly, but within the first few hours, a lot of people would die within the first few days and weeks. You know, I think Chicago is in the envelope of the ash cloud, or in its fallout pattern. It would be pretty terrible. A whole bunch of the country would be set in, you know, would be immediately in darkness, and all of this ash would be unbreathable, and people would, you know, people would be breathing in essentially, you know, dustified glass, and their lungs would be bleeding. Yeah, if Yellowstone Caldera went off, it would be pretty terrible. But it still wouldn't be the end of the world. I mean, the human race has survived a lot of shit. So I guess that's the thing. You have to ask yourself, what's the plan? What do you believe? Are you an atheist? If you're an atheist, then things do look kind of like Kirsten Dunst and Melancholia, and at least you get a boob shot. That's the thing. At least with Kirsten Dunst and Melancholia, you get a pretty good, you know, naked body shot. And so what if the earth goes kablooey? If you're an atheist, if you believe in God, then you say to yourself, you know what? I could get hit by a car tomorrow. Somebody could mug me tomorrow. I could catch fire tomorrow. These things could happen. There, maybe some of these are less likely than others, but I could have a heart attack tomorrow. I could have a chest pain shimbly, and think, oh, this is just a shimbly, but really it's just, you know, me having a thrombo or a stroke or some type of a myocardial infarct. And yeah, I could have a heart attack and die. I could die in my sleep. You could die in your sleep. And if you're a Christian and you've lived a good life, that's a blessed thing, I suppose. There are worse ways to die. Believe me, there are worse ways to die. But people's worlds end every day. Every day people die. Every day the world ends for some people. It's a tragedy, yes, but it's reality. And it does. You get sad about it because you miss these people. But if you're a Christian, you know where they're going. If you're not, you just learn to accept it. Anywho, that's enough of that negative world coming to an end shit. I've got to see if I got a better topic to do next.